KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and, well, we've got another Marsh performer here with us, Charlie Varon, award-winning San Francisco-based writer and performer, currently starring in Feisty Old Jew at the Marsh in San Francisco. Again, that's the Marsh San Francisco. His other one-man shows include Rabbi Sam, Ralph Nader is Missing. He also directed Dan Hoyle's hit show, Things They Happen and The Real Americans. And congratulations on another show that I guess is also having some real success.
Thank you. It is good to be back here, Michael.
Where did this idea come from? You've been spending time around the Jewish old home?
Well, a couple of years ago, a whole new cast of characters took up residence in my imagination, and I have been racing as fast as I can to keep up with them. These are all old Jews living in a retirement home in San Francisco. I have been writing and writing and writing and having some of the most fun writing of my life.
Did you see the Broadway production of Old Jews Telling Jokes?
No, I've heard of it.
Play in any way? This?
No, it had no effect. This whole project took me by surprise. I thought I'd do a couple short pieces, and I'm halfway through what seems like a 5 or 6 year project that just keeps growing.
But how terrific that is.
Yeah, and I'm falling in love with these characters. It's a love letter to American Jews of my parents' generation. It's a love letter to San Francisco. And it's just a world.
And it's got some political controversy in it, like Brian Copeland's show. I mean, particularly local stuff. You've lived in the Mission, over 30 years now. And like anybody who lives in that area, you are obviously affected by what's happening in terms of gentrification, in terms of the techies.
A show about a city in flux. Let me just do the very beginning of the show, give you a taste to drop you into that world. It all started at breakfast. The five early risers were lingering over coffee and the newspaper when Bernie Shine pulled up a chair, parked himself at the table, and made a show of swallowing all 8 of his pills at once. He took the prescription bottles out of a blue Tupperware container, unscrewed them one by one, and dropped the capsules into his palm. All the while, he hummed lightly. He knew the humming drove Al Mink crazy, but didn't look at Al, just kept humming till his fist was full, then opened his mouth wide like a bird. Selma Cohen suppressed a giggle. She looked at Bernie, sitting next to her, his mouth full of medication, and Al across the table, still glaring at Bernie. Men, Selma thought. Men. Al Mink knew what he wanted to say, but waited till Bernie had brought his glass to his lips to make the remark. This is supposed to be elegant assisted living, Bernie. Be more elegant. That made Bernie cough and sputter. Orange juice and 3 pills flew out of his mouth, and everyone got sprayed. Selma was the first out of her chair, coming to Bernie's aid with water and pats on the back. The others made noises of concern to Bernie and chastised Al for what he had done, though secretly it gave them pleasure. So that drops you into the world of...
The older people, but right, not the world of what Bernie hates,
right,
which is all of San Francisco's new kind of, lattes and medical marijuana places, right, and tattoo parlors.
Exactly. Bernie is escaping the confines of the retirement home. He's like an octogenarian Curious George who springs himself and has all of these adventures, gets into all kinds of mischief, but there is no man in the yellow hat to stop him from going surfing.
He's also, like so many San Franciscans, trying to find a cab, and that leads
right,
to the adventure.
Right.
I mean, he can't get a cab, so he puts out his thumb and
exactly.
gets picked up by these young techie
Well, first he puts out
types.
His thumb, and he's watching the cars that aren't stopping. And, they're slowing down and looking at him, and Bernie knew what they were thinking. Old man off his meds, nutcase in a $7,000 suit. And then finally a car does pull over. Black, shiny car, 2 surfboards strapped to the
Tesla,
roof.
It's a Tesla, isn't it?
It's a Tesla. Bernie gets in. It's air-conditioned, which is wonderful because it's one of those hot October Sundays. And there he is in the car, his eyes, and he's overwhelmed by 2 things. He gets in the car, 2 things. One is this incredibly overpowering smell of coffee. And the other is the amplified voice of Tony Bennett, the best singer of his generation. But as his eyes adjust, he sees there is no one else in the car remotely connected to that generation.
Well, in fact,
they're all in
of,
their 20s. They're
techie. Thinking about duets of Tony Bennett with Lady Gaga.
It's one of the many. Yeah, I mean, that's betrayal for Bernie, is that Tony Bennett has sung duets with members of their generation, with Queen Latifah and Lady Gaga.
Talking to Charlie Veron, and his new show is Feisty Old Jew. Obviously, you've got a lot of affection for Bernie, for his vitality and for his sensibility, and like you said, your parents' generation, all that. But he is a curmudgeon-y, and kind of, in some ways, dislikes so many things that you want to say, come on, lighten up, Bernie.
Well, I write characters about whom I cannot resolve my feelings. I love Bernie, and he drives me nuts. Actually, it's funny, when I sent it to my parents, who, I mean, my parents, I'm blessed, are still alive. My mom's 90. My dad is about to turn 87. Of Bernie, my father said.
Your father married an older woman.
He did. My father says, of Bernie, he said, oh, I can't get enough of this guy. And my mom says, I can. So he's a guy I'm on an edge with. He has extraordinary vitality. He is a risk taker. He has not, just because he's 83, he has not stopped climbing whatever hill or mountain he can find in whatever way. And but he is a child of the Depression who started from nothing in Brooklyn, nothing. He doesn't have so much as a high school diploma, and he can't stand anyone who thinks that they are better than him. And that is a pretty powerful fuel for Bernie and for this story. And so when he runs, he finds himself trapped, he hitchhikes. Who picks him up? These 320-somethings. And he immediately starts making assumptions about them, and they make assumptions about him, all of which assumptions are overturned by the end of the piece.
But it takes us to Bolinas.
It takes us to the
surfing
beach.
And Bolinas at the beach, and Bernie thinking, well, I could do a wave. Why not?
Well, not
an octogenarian doing a wave in Bolinas?
Well, the main thing is that he says he's in the car, and he says, all my life I've wanted to surf. Today's the day. He leaned forward, put his hand on the surfer's shoulder. The guy in the passenger seat has got the long blonde curls and the tanned face of a surfer. And he says, you and I are about the same size. I'll use your wetsuit. And, of course, the surfer doesn't think it's a very good idea for an old man to surf. And Bernie explains that he's no ordinary old man. He, you know, goes to the gym every day. He does the free weights as well as the machines.
Kind of inflates his kinesiology.
Well, he does. He does this long litany of, you know, swimming in the bay, the triathlons he used to do, playing racquetball twice a week with a 31-year-old. And when his grandson taught him how to skateboard a year ago, he picked it right up. And then there's a little aside where, in fact, Bernie had cooked up what his grandmother used to call a Michigan at Simmons von Emerson Ligen. A crazy stew of truth and lies. So he will stop at nothing to get what he wants. And then he says to the surfer, he says, what kind of odds would you give me that I ride a wave this afternoon? And he's never been surfing. And by the time they get to the beach, he has got this wave. He's got the guy who's driving the car to say the odds are 800 to 1. And, well, 800 to 1 on the $500 that's in Bernie's pocket is $400,000, and there's the wager.
Yeah. And
so it's this collision.
It's a nice surprise, though, in terms of what happens with the wave, which, you know, I liked. I'm not going to be a spoiler on this by any means, but in terms of whether he's able to do the wave or not for this bet, for this wager, it takes you into some surprising territory. But you're really talking about some pretty serious motifs again here. I mean, gentrification, but also aging and, you know, taking it on.
Right. Absolutely. What is it to be a child of the Depression who grew up with nothing and watch what San Francisco is becoming, to just see the Starbucks on every corner, to see the restaurant serving pink aioli and truffle butter? And what does this mean to somebody who's had to kind of claw his way up through life? You know, there's
or
a line
with Bagel and Lox as opposed to all these new kinds of things.
I mean, there's a line where he says he hated what these kids had turned San Francisco into. He hated the people who all the phony people who thought drinking $6 coffee made them cultured people, who did not know the value of a buck, who made money off of nothing and spent it on nothing. He hated what these kids had turned San Francisco into, a city of she-she cafes and restaurants and boutiques and bike shops and farmers markets and tattoo parlors and medical marijuana dispensaries.
Now, that voice that you're doing right now, that's kind of the narrator in Bernie.
It's a kind of, yeah, I mean...
It's hybridized.
It's a hybridized, yes.
And what about this other important theme that you just touched on before about the assumption about people that turn out to be wrong?
Well, I mean, that's what I love in a play, in a story, is some kind of reversal where people's... Because I know in my life my assumptions are continually being overturned. And so Bernie has these kids pegged as spoiled... You know,
entitled
trust fund kids, yeah. And they are not. And they haven't pegged. I mean, there's this moment in the story where Bernie lets his eyes close and they think he's asleep. And the surfer in front says, "Dude's asleep." And Bernie listens to them talk about him, thinking that he can't hear them. And they, you know, they speculate about his eye, his age.
They actually use the phrase "compos mentis."
Right. Well, the driver thinks he has Alzheimer's, and yeah. the surfer says, "Oh no, he's totally compos mentis. 80% okay, 80% compos mentis." And Bernie is hearing all this, and is enraged.
Talking
and of course,
to Charlie
they're
Baron.
Wrong. He's sharper than they are.
We're talking to Charlie Baron, once dubbed the city's brightest satiric star by the San Francisco Chronicle, and praised.
Once, praised, but am I still? Come
well,
find out. See if he's
yeah,
still.
Come
see if the old
see
man
the
still
show
has
and
it.
See if the old. You were praised by the New Yorker. You were praised by the Washington Post, and there are people who have certainly followed your career. I want to get you to do a little bit Rush Limbaugh, too, which is always a request of mine when you're here. But in the meantime, let me invite listeners to join us. In fact, you can do that now if you'd like to talk to Charlie Baron or ask about his new show, Feisty Old Jew, or talk about perhaps experiencing other shows that Charlie has done. Ralph Nader is Missing. Was it Rush Limbaugh at Night School? Rabbi Sam.
People's we welcome Violin.
Welcome 10
Day your Soup.
Involvement in the program. Toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. And again, we do welcome your involvement. Any questions or comments for our guest, Charlie Baron, toll-free to call us now at 866-733-6786 or to email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any question or comment you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And particularly, maybe like to hear from some of you youngins who feel that there is maybe a great divide or a chasm between you and some of these older folks, that you're changing the culture and what your thoughts are on it. I mean, that's a big question and something that a lot of particularly San Franciscans are constantly sort of contending with. But maybe also hear from some of you older folk who have been through the Depression and look upon this with a jaundiced eye or a cynical one, or maybe don't want to look on it at all, or look on it as, you know, just the way things are moving forward, and that's progress and so forth. How long has it been since you've done Limbaugh's voice?
Oh, well, the show opened 20 years ago, and then we revived it 10 years ago. So I'm not in the finest of Limbaugh fettle or form, but, you know, there is something about the San Francisco performance scene that draws me like a magnet. I have to get over to San Francisco to see what the lefties are saying and doing.
Actually, apropos of the theme, one of the big themes in your new play, Limbaugh, somebody sent me an MP3 of Limbaugh talking about San Francisco and saying he'd read the I'm trying to think of the book by... I'm looking at you, Dan, for some help here. Anyway, there have been a number of these books, you know, which essentially say it's become too gentrified and San Francisco is changing and lamenting it,
right.
Mourning it, really. Okay. Limbaugh says, I like to go to San Francisco now because they used to dislike me. Now you've got all these rich libertarians, and now I'm much more welcome. I feel like I'm more at home there.
Times change. Oh, should we mention the offer? We have a special for Forum listeners.
I didn't know about that.
Yes. If you go to themarsh.org and buy your tickets for Feisty Old Jew, this is a special only for Forum listeners. If you buy your tickets by midnight tonight at themarsh.org, you get $5 off per ticket if you click on Radio Special and use the code KQED.
And you worked all this out. You negotiated all this.
We worked it out because we love KQED and your listeners.
Well, that's good of you. And a lot of people who love Charlie Vera. And by the way, I mentioned earlier, also known for your directing. We talked to Dan Hoyle about Things They Happen and The Real Americans. You directed both of those.
Yes, and The Real Americans opens next week off-Broadway for, I think, a five-week run. So, yeah, The Marsh continues to give... beyond its numbers, I mean, we are this tiny little theater on Valencia Street and now in Berkeley, and our shows just seem to keep coming. I think we have six shows currently running. We've got Brian Copeland's The Scion, we've got Jeff Hoyle's Geezer, Don Reed, Marga Gomez, Jill Weiss has a wonderful new show, and there's more in the pipeline. It's going to be a great year. We're coming up on our 25th anniversary this fall.
And
I have been
the
at the Marsh
Jew,
for
we want to mention, plays through May 4th. So
we're there through May
run,
4th. Yeah. Yes, the initial run sold out, but we added 10 performances through May 4th, so there are some tickets left.
And this is kind of almost clubby, this group of single performers. Everybody knows each other and seems to adore each other.
I would use the phrase autistic community rather than clubby. No, we have lived up to that subtitle, A Breeding Ground for New Performance. It's a joyous, fertile, wonderful time to be at this theater. The waves. I'm working with an 18-year-old performer named Desi Gallegos, who has a new show that will be coming to the Marsh, which is extraordinary. I'm directing it. And so we've got many generations of performers, lots of work to see. It's a thrilling, thrilling time at the Marsh.
And you're doing something called The Fish Sisters?
Fish Sisters is a new piece, another of this cycle of stories about old Jews living at the retirement home in San Francisco. This one is a story about Selma Cohen, and that one is in development.
Who we just heard from, in fact.
Right. She was at that breakfast table, and in Fish Sisters, she wakes up from a dream that has made her laugh, and it sends her down 75 years of memories. So,
now I'm sure you've heard this before from maybe some feisty old Jews like Bernie, but can you really make a living doing this kind of thing?
Well,
what kind of living is it?
I put it together somehow or not. You know, I teach. In fact, I'm doing a new class called Jumpstart Your Writing. I teach solo performance, and I also direct, and I do narrate audio tours. I'm the voice of the audio tour of the Georgia O'Keeffe show at the De Young now. So, yeah, so it's a good life, a busy, good life.
And can you keep in contact with that Depression generation of old Jews? I mean, aside from going to the Home for the Aged, because not necessarily, you know, I used to joke about the fact that there isn't really a Jewish community to speak of in San Francisco, unless you include Seacliff as a Jewish community. Distinctively. So,
yeah, a lot of the characters I find I'm writing are transplants from the East Coast. Certainly Bernie is a Brooklynite, but not all. I think there is a Jewish community here, and I think it's
community, yes, but neighborhood, really.
No neighborhood, that's true, yeah.
That's what I meant by Seacliff.
But what I'm finding as I immerse myself and try to imagine my way inside these characters— and try to imagine the lives they've lived, what it was like to grow up before television, before movies, let alone before iPhones, the onslaught of technology, the incredible changes they've lived through, who adapts and who has trouble adapting, what is it like to have grandchildren who see the world in a completely different way, to have a lifetime of experience, memories, and the drama of the retirement home, all these personalities stuck together for how long? For the rest of their lives.
Until they die.
Just the different personality types, the different ways of looking at the world and how they collide.
Well, again, you can join us with Charlie Varen. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. Here's Robert. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Charlie. I'm sorry if... I didn't catch the first part of your show, and I'm speaking out of turn. But what I was telling the screener is that I find one of the questions that I asked is the cost of your show. Everything is expensive. I have three children, and your show sounds interesting, but I don't know that I could afford going to your show. And how do you overcome this becoming part of the problem of the gentrification that's going on?
Well, actually, the Marsh's ticket prices have stayed pretty accessible. We also have a program where people can volunteer and see a show for free, so you might look into that. And we do have this, we do try to give discounts, but we also still have to keep our doors open and pay our staff. So it's a balancing act.
And we thank you for the call, Robert. Talk a little bit about working with David Ford. You've been doing that for, what, some 20 years?
23 years.
Brian Copeland, of course, also working with David Ford.
But David Ford is the open secret of why The Marsh has given so much wonderful work to the world. He is kind of an unsung genius who knows so much about not just theater, but about the world, about life. He has an uncanny read of human beings, of characters, of an extraordinary craft of how you build a show. And that's been the great collaborative joy of my life, is learning from David, working with David, struggling with David. And when I work with performers like Dan Hoyle and Rebecca Fisher and Desi Gallegos, I'm trying to do for them what David does for me, which is keep asking the tough question, keep building the strongest show we can make.
And we're going to give a plug for The Real Americans by Dan Hoyle, which actually opens in New York off Broadway at Culture Project for a 5-week run. That begins on March 13th. And
right.
You directed it. You continue to be involved with that show?
I do, long distance. I can't go to New York to
Skyping
direct it.
Skyping?
Yeah, Skyping, email.
Yeah. Let me bring another caller on. And this is from Palo Alto. Marcia, good morning.
Oh, good morning. So I wanted to say, first of all, I saw The People's Violin years ago. It was the kind of show that we came back to two or three times. We kept bringing other friends to see. It was one of the funniest shows that we have ever seen. And I would like to ask, you know, Mr. Varin, where did you come up with these? Like, where does this inspiration come from? Because this show sounds completely different than that show, and that one was so inspired.
We should have mentioned The People's Violin. Thanks for bringing that up, Marcia, which a lot of people loved. But
yeah,
it's a source of inspiration, Charlie.
Characters take, I don't know where they come from. They take up residence in me. Often there is a voice. Often there is an edge. Often there is some strong personality trait. There's some problem that is going to interest me enough to spend months or years trying to get inside this character. And Bernie came, like no other character I've ever written, took root in me and just wouldn't let go. And he has such life force, you know.
Losing yourself, are you?
Well, it's an escape from myself. It's a vacation from myself. And Bernie is, what kind of odds would you give me that I ride a wave this afternoon? He's never surfed before. And that vitality in an 83-year-old is thrilling to live inside. It is thrilling to imagine. It's thrilling to write. It's thrilling to perform. And so for Feisty Old Jew, Bernie is the engine, and he's a character that as I walk on stage every night, I'm just wondering, you know, what will I discover? What new tricks does he have up his sleeve?
Because this, you mean, is every, this show is different in that sense.
No, not in the text so much as in the performance, and how, you know, how he, on any given night, what mischievous way he may say the words or surprise me. So theater is a living thing. I mean, it's. I think one of the great things about theater in this screen-dominated world is that you go and you see something that will never exist again and has never existed before. There's a live, electric feeling, a sense of vitality in the theater. And I feel that keenly as I'm performing Feisty Old Jew, because there is just this life force that is zinging through Bernie, and you don't know what wager he's going to try next, what lie he's going to tell next, what dare he's going to give next. He is playing his cards moment by moment, and he has not given up on life. He's more vital in some ways than I am, and he's 30 years old.
I was going to say, you'd like to be like that at 86.
In some ways, I'd like to be less manipulative, but I'd like to be more, you know, more circumspect and more careful and more decent. But boy, would I like to have that vitality at 83.
Well, you know, you're talking about your inspirations. Little anecdote. I had someone on the air one day, and you know who I'm talking about? The famous Croatian intellectual?
Slavo Žižek.
Žižek was on the air, and Charlie Veron leaves a message in Žižek's voice. I mean, just hearing him for the first time, I mean, you absorbed him.
Well, Slavo Žižek is an intellectual who has also the very... one thought does not stop before the next thought begins, and there is Marx, I think, and Engels both said much to say about this. So, yes, that to answer your question, where does inspiration come from? In that case, inspiration came from Forum. I heard Slavo Žižek for the first time. I swallowed him whole, and I spat him out in the form of a character in the show that David and Jerry Lynn Cohen and I did a couple years ago called Life Gone Viral, where I turned Slavo Žižek into Zizo Slavic.
Oh, I didn't know you used him.
Yes.
I just knew that you absorbed him from Forum. interesting.
Yeah. Human beings need Coca-Cola. Mushrooms do not need Coca-Cola. It was
drawn to the vitality again. Yeah?
Absolutely. The vitality of language, the vitality of thought, the vitality of, you know, just the energy of speech and everything that's underneath it. So that's a lot of what fuels me.
Whereas, for example, Brian, whom we spoke to in the last segment, you know, it comes a lot out of his own experience. And research as well, but it's a very different kind of crafting.
Yeah, right. We all have our own sources of inspiration and the things that feed our craft. I think the other thing is it's not just what inspires you, but as you try to sustain staying inside a character, building a piece, what is it that makes it grow more complex, more rich, deeper, and in a way more problematic, where it leads you into more and more unsolvable questions. And I think... I'm finding that with these new characters. They're very rich, alive, complex.
Feisty El Jew will be playing at the Marsh through May 4th. And again, you want to tell your special offer for Forum listeners?
Forum listeners, $5 off if you buy your tickets online tonight at themarsh.org. You can get them for any show. Just click on Radio Special and use the code KQED.
And Saturday at 8, Sunday at 7, again, themarsh.org is, and the phone number is 284152823055. Charlie, thank you for being with us.
Thank
Good luck
you,
with
pleasure.
The show. And thank you all, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening, and appreciate your being here with us. Be back with you if all goes according to plan tomorrow. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.